Now we move on to part 7, which is the actual use and application of data for consequence analysis. Moving on to slide 113. So we've gathered all this information on contaminant properties, fate and transport, toxicity information, and health effects. How do we now integrate all this information together to assess consequences to help us make decisions about appropriate response actions? That's the intent of this section, is to describe this consequence evaluation process. Moving on to slide 114. The consequence analysis process is really divided into an evaluation of two components. The fate and transport of the contaminant. Specifically, will the contaminant reach members of the population? And if so, how large a sector of the population would potentially be affected? And secondly, the overall health effects of the contaminant. So that if it does reach members of the population, what types of health effects could be expected, and what will their severity be? Moving on to slide 115. So the fate and transport processes are critical, the fate and transport processes that were discussed previously in the earlier parts of this presentation will be a critical part of consequence analysis, and we need to rely on basic chemical contaminant properties such as solubility, hydrolysis rates, volatilization, reactivity of the contaminant, the stability of the contaminant in an aqueous media, and the adsorptivity of the contaminant, among other properties that dictate the fate and transport through a system. Furthermore, one should also integrate incident-specific information into the fate and transport analysis. For example, if the location of contaminant introduction is known or suspected, as well as the initial concentration of the contaminant. That may be used in conjunction with knowledge of system hydraulics to determine the spread of the contaminant. However, it should be acknowledged that, unfortunately, in most situations, we would not have sufficient knowledge about certainly the initial concentration of the contaminant. And in many cases, we may not even know the location of introduction, so we may be using best judgment in that situation to assess fate and transport of a contaminant. Moving on to slide 116. There are a number of tools that we can use to help us assess fate and transport through a water system. For example, there are various hydraulic models, such as EPA net and pipeline net, that predict the fate and transport of a contaminant through a water distribution system. They rely not only on the hydraulics of the system, but also the contaminant properties, such as rate of hydrolysis, rate of oxidation, rate of decay, that may dictate the ultimate concentration as a contaminant spreads through a system. However, not all water systems are set up to use these advanced tools, such as pipeline net. And even if they have these tools, they may not be able to use them rapidly in a response mode. So there are simpler alternatives to estimating the spread of a contaminant, such as the use of operational information or operator expertise and SCADA information from data acquisition systems that may be used to evaluate in a very crude manner the spread of water through a distribution system. But that approximation may be sufficient for the initial consequence analysis. Moving on to slide 117 and continuing on fate and transport, the fate and transport information, the properties and operational information that are collected can be used collectively to determine whether or not the contamination might be mitigated either by existing processes or treatment barriers or the conditions within the distribution system. For example, if something were to be introduced into the source water and you knew something about the contaminant and obviously your treatment system, that may determine whether or not that contaminant would pass through treatment and enter the distribution system. the area impacted by the spread of the contaminant has been identified. One can then turn their evaluation towards estimating the number of individuals that would potentially be affected, as well as any critical infrastructure or facilities within that area. For example, are there hospitals or other important sectors of society that are within an area of the distribution system that might potentially have been contaminated? Moving on to slide 118, and into health effects. So the fate and transport assessment is one piece of the puzzle. It needs to be combined with an understanding of health effects of a particular contaminant to complete the initial consequence analysis. And the health effects of a contaminant that might be considered include the formulation, species, or strain of the contaminant. That's important to consider as different chemicals might exist in different formulations that might in turn have different toxicological or fate and transport properties. In a similar manner, pathogens may exist as different strains with different infectivities or different mortality rates. We're also obviously interested in the toxicity and infectivity information, the severity of the health effects, potential exposure routes, communicability, and the ability to medically intervene to provide or to save lives. Moving on to slide 119, the toxicity information we're concerned with might be values such as the MCLs or lethal doses or reference doses or health advisories. You consider these benchmarks combined with information about the concentration of the contaminant within a distribution system to determine the potential severity of the contamination event. Communicability is important, particularly solely for the pathogens, because if a disease is transmissible from human to human, then simply containing the water or minimizing that route of exposure is not sufficient to alleviate the problem. And there may be other public health steps that need to be taken to contain the spread of the disease. Fortunately, there are not many pathogens that are suitable for water transmission that are also very contagious. But there are exceptions to that statement. Treatability is, again, another piece of evaluation, because some chemicals and some pathogens may be easily inactivated by levels of residual disinfectant that exist within a distribution system. And if so, then the health effects are minimized because the potency of that contaminant is diminished. Moving to slide 120, continuing with an evaluation of health effects, we need to consider potential sensitive subpopulations that might be more adversely affected by a particular contaminant, because our mission as public health servants is not simply to protect the average person, but to protect those with special needs, special subpopulations. Finally, wrapping it up, if there is not sufficient information available to completely assess the spread of a contaminant through a system or the associated health effects, it's best to take a conservative stance and assume that there are the potential for public health impacts. And this may initially result in a more conservative response, but that may be necessary to protect public health until enough information is collected to either ascertain the exact identity of the contaminant and the exact concentration profile throughout the system, or on the other hand, to verify that a contamination event has not occurred at all. Moving on to slide 121, this flowchart shows a decision matrix for researching contaminant properties. And it begins in the center of the chart at the blue diamond. And the first question, the first evaluation point is, has the contaminant been positively identified? In many cases, the answer to that question will be no. And we'll be working in that circular loop at the top of the chart, in which we move on to evaluating whether or not there are witness reports, lab results, field test results of available that would allow us to make some determination about the potential identity of the contaminant. And if there's not additional information available, then we need to, as part of the response, go out and collect additional information and consult with experts to sift through the available information until we can at least get some sort of tentative identification of a contaminant. Until we reach that point, there's not a lot we can do to resolve the problem. So we have to keep striving for that identification, even though at the same time you may need to take steps to protect public health in light of this uncertainty and in light of the potential risk to the public. So that's a topic more fully discussed in the response protocol toolbox that I won't get into in detail here. But moving down the decision tree, once you do have identification of a contaminant, the next question to ask is, has the public been exposed? In many cases, we may not know the answer to that, or the answer may be no at that time. In that case, we need to do research to understand the fate and transport properties of that particular contaminant and evaluate whether things like containment or natural attenuation of the contaminant would be sufficient to minimize the risk of exposure to the public. If the public has been exposed or if there is the potential for exposure, then we need to go down the left leg of the lower half of the decision tree and research the health effects and evaluate whether or not the health effects are consistent with the observed symptoms that are being reported by public health officials. And then we'll need to work collaboratively with public health agencies to determine the appropriate response actions to manage this incident as effectively as possible. Moving on to slide 122, a couple of examples of the outcomes of consequence analysis. In the first example, we have a contaminant that we know or deduce is introduced at levels that would cause severe health effects. However, through an evaluation of fate and transport information, we find that the contaminant is degraded or diluted to levels below concern before it reaches any of our consumers. In this case, the consequences are minimal, and we would work primarily with the water utility and maybe collaboratively with the public health department to determine an appropriate response action, if any. In the second example, we again have a contaminant that's introduced at levels of concern that could cause severe health effects. Furthermore, through our fate and transport analysis, we conclude that it would reach a segment of the population at levels of concern. However, in this case, in researching the health effects, we may determine that the manner in which water is used by these consumers is not consistent with effective exposure routes. As an example, maybe one would have to ingest 5 or 6 liters of water at one time to have a severe adverse health effect. If that were the case, then the consequences again would be marginal. However, since there is a potential for exposure in this case, it would be necessary to work with public health officials to determine appropriate actions to make sure that no one was exposed to harmful levels. Moving to slide 123, continuing with example 3, we now have a contaminant that does reach a segment of the population at levels of health concern, and in this case, the route of exposure is consistent with uses of drinking water. Then we would have obviously need to take immediate steps to protect public health and minimize exposure, and this would be done collaboratively between the public water system, the public health agencies, and probably the state drinking water primacy agency. Example 4 describes a scenario in which a contaminant is introduced, so there's a confirmed contamination incident, but it's determined that it's at levels that would not cause severe health effects. However, that does not necessarily mean that you're off the hook. There may be a need to decontaminate the system, which would result potentially in a long-term remediation effort and a disruption in the supply of potable water. So, again, we have a response in this case and the need to make sure that the public has a reliable source of drinking water for consumption as well as for sanitation needs while the remedial action is going on. Moving on to slide 124, there are secondary considerations to consequence analysis. For example, contaminant properties may also help us to evaluate appropriate remediation options for contamination in response to a confirmed contamination incident. The properties and treatability information in particular would be important to consider as one determines the best remedial option. Also, there may be impacts on water system and its consumers that can be addressed through an evaluation of contaminant properties. The second bullet talks about something, again, that occurs early on in the response to a potential contamination threat, and that is that the contaminant properties themselves may help us to identify what the contaminant is. If you know it has a certain odor, certain other properties and attributes, that may help you to narrow down the list of potential contaminants. For example, the physical properties, the taste, odor, and appearance, the potential for the contaminant to impact water quality parameters. For example, many contaminants may react with chlorine and quench the chlorine residual. And certainly symptoms reported by health agencies. Trained doctors and medical practitioners may be able to evaluate those symptoms, make a connection to drinking water, and determine the potential identity of a contaminant. That concludes part 7 of the presentation.